Hello, everyone. This is Gruesome Herzog. My very special guest is director, producer, writer Hilton Ariel Ruiz. He is known for Zombie with a Shotgun in 2019, amongst other films. And also, I'm pretty sure, a comic as well. But let's welcome Hilton. Hilton, how are you?
I'm good. Listen, thank you for having me on the show. Thank you. And I'm excited. Let's get it on.
Let's do it. Yeah. So I've been talking to Matt Chasen. I didn't realize that he moved to West Virginia for a little bit, and I'm in PA, so I'm only like 4 hours away from him and about 3 hours away from you. I'm right in between. And he mentioned about you and Zombie the Shotgun Part 2. Now, this is before it was released. So I've been promoting on my page. I think you saw it. I've been posting stuff for to help raise. And, you know, there's uniqueness with zombie films. I've seen Zombie with a Shotgun. I've seen Zombie Strippers and Zombie This and Zombie That. And the ones that I think are the ones that I really like is the ones that are creative. I mean, Zombie with a Shotgun. I mean, can even operate one? We don't know, you know, until you watch a movie. But I think it's a pretty clever idea because it's more of a comic book character as well. But to be able to make it into a feature, I did watch the one from 2019, and I absolutely enjoyed that one very much. So, of course, I'm going to hop in here and help you promote part two because it's now part of me and part of my bloodline. So let's talk about it. Now, can you explain to listeners about where the Zombie the Shotgun idea even came from?
Yes, I appreciate you also watching it and you know, even talking about how it's and being creative, and absolutely, it's a different take on the zombie genre. And it started in 2012. Well, 2012 was the original web series, but even before that, I was working on a zombie concept. Was working on this project, and a lot of it was basically I wanted to do my own sort of interpretation of the zombie genre. I felt like the zombie genre was needed something refreshing or whatever. I always felt like there should have been a zombie that was like half man, half zombie, you know? And I always felt like the zombies to me always felt like they were always sick, and why nobody ever helped the zombies, you know? And all these movies, you just never like, let's help these guys, you know? And it was just me, just like, again, my whole interpretation. As I got more deeper into it, I started getting like more inspiration from like the whole like AIDS epidemic here in New York City, which where I'm from originally, and how it sort of to me was like kind of like the whole idea was like when the whole epidemic hit here in New York City, people were scared of anybody that had said they had the virus, the HIV virus. They didn't want to go near them. They ran away from them. They were scared of them. Even doctors, they wouldn't even take care of them or treat them. And as soon as we started finding out the real cause and the real, you know, diagnosis of these HIV patients and everything, you know, we started getting educated about it. But here in the zombie virus, no one has really got educated about it. And I feel like we just, what if like that whole story of me growing up during that time and putting it into the whole zombie series and this whole zombie feel of it. Because we shot it in New York City. We shot it in my studio apartment. And we you know, not the abandoned place, but next door, the bedroom was my studio apartment. And the next door was actually a building that I was able to use, that abandoned building right there in Lower East Side Manhattan and Chinatown, basically, you could say. So in 2012, I met Braden Body, who plays Zombie with a Shotgun, aka Aaron. And I told him about it. I said, hey, look, I got this great idea. It's a little bit, the title's a little bit quirky, Zombie with a Shotgun. You know, it was like, oh man, you know, at that time, everybody, you know, you had a hobo with a shotgun and everything like that. And I was like, oh, snaps, you know, Zombie with a Shotgun just was very clicky. And I felt like to get somebody's attention for zombie, because there's thousands of zombie films coming. And I felt the title was so important. And the title was catchy. And we went on that August of 2012. We shot the very first episode of Zombie with a Shotgun. It was about 4 minutes and 52 seconds, and it went viral. And it was the first time that I ever felt any of my work gone viral. And I was like, whoa, what do we do here? You know, we caught the wave. So we did the 5 episodes. And I thought it was over. I thought it was like, okay, we're done. But this is when I started social media also around that time. And right. It just kept growing, my numbers and numbers and people asking me questions. Is this a film? Is this a feature? What's going on? And everything. So then that's when I met Simone Guglielmini, who's an Italian comic book artist who works for Image Comics. One of his very known comics is called Near Death by Image Comics. He loved the concept of it. And he's like, listen, I want to come in and let's make his first issue of Zombie with a Shotgun. And I was so ecstatic. I was like, oh my God, you know, and I, you know, God bless him. You know, he taught me the ins and outs of the whole comic book industry of how to create a comic, how to do everything. I learned it so well. Like, it was just an amazing, like, schooling for me that time. So we came out with the first comic and then we wanted to do the second and third. Then boom, social media got really big. And that's the time that everybody said we should do a feature. Then we raised money. It took us 3 years to raise money, believe it or not, for the first film. And we raised it in 2019. The film was released in November, I think November 28th or 29th. And we was excited. We was like, wow, this is it. We're going to go to Comic Cons. We're going to go to conventions. And 3 months later, the world shut down. And we were, believe it or not, when the film was released, I was already talking to about five producers on already getting the sequel going. And that was just, we were talking almost on a weekly basis. And it looked like it was going to happen. Boom, shut down. Fast forward to this year, the whole vibe started growing again about. And I think what happened is that a lot of these films that were coming out, you know, independent horror films, we're starting to get the attention of like, hey, let's bring back now this whole independent feel of it. And that's when Brian, producer, came in and Matt came in and they were like, hey, we can help you. We can come in. We can produce this. We can help you. And I'm going to tell you the truth. And this is pretty amazing. I would say about maybe a little bit over 2 months, that's when we started talking about doing this. Even before that, we had no, like, we're going to do this or anything. It was just a little bit over 2 months. Matt and Brian said, we got to do this. And I was like, oh my God. So I went 0 to 60, like in 1 second. And I was like, no way. I was like, no way. They was like, yes. And then Matt and Brian said, we could get this actor for this character, actor for this character. Let's do this. Boom, 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 boom. And I'm like, oh my God, what do I do now? It's like, get the campaign ready. I got the artist. I got everybody started going, making all the calls, doing everything. And then boom, we're here right now promoting Zombie with a Shotgun on Indiegogo campaign, raising monies for part two. And yeah, it's, you know, it's become, you know, then I put two more other producers on it. And that's where we're at right now, promoting the film.
Nice. Yeah, I noticed that there's two people in the film that I know personally, but never met them, but I've talked to them enough. It's like I know them as Bill Oberst Jr. and Lynn Lowry.
Yes, Bill is from Pennsylvania. That's right. And so is Lynn, right? Lynn is from Pennsylvania also originally?
No, Lynn lives in Georgia right now. She's from Georgia. But Lynn, obviously I know her from way back into I'll Drink Your Blood in 1971. You know, I love Lynn. I've interviewed her twice and I think she's a fantastic. And of course, Bill, I interviewed quite a few times because of the Fantastic Horror Film Festival in San Diego. And of course, way back in 2010, when his very first feature, Dismal, that's how I got to know Bill. And I got to know Matt around the same time in 2010, because I was interviewing some of his clients. So I've been friends with Matt for 13 years as well. So I've been in this for a long time. I've talked to a lot of people, and Zombie the Shotgun, you know, how your idea of this movie is, you use the slogan with the shotgun. You mentioned about Hobo the Shotgun. I mean, I think there's one, I think it was called, Zombies Blood and Money or something like that. Something really strange for zombie films. And people are being clever by using these films as zombies. There's a lot of them. Like we mentioned, Zombies Strippers, Zombie Versus Strippers. I mean, to have a zombie film with a shotgun, I mean, to see the movie and to see how you made that on the budget that you had, and I can only imagine with a little bit of a bigger budget, you probably can make a part three and a part four. It just depends. You mentioned about how it took off, right?
Yeah.
And then COVID. Yeah. COVID hit everywhere. I actually had an interview with an actress from England because I started doing interviews again. I was on a hiatus for a while. So I think you're my sixth or seventh this year. It's in a short period of time too. She was mentioned about how COVID, you know, ruined their plans about going somewhere to film a movie and stuff. And, you know, and it sucks because it shut down everything.
Everything.
You know, even as me, I was a store manager at a gas station / grocery store during that. And I worked the whole way through COVID. I mean, the whole way through. I dealt with people calling off all the time because they're scared because they think they have COVID. And people come into the store and you don't know if they have COVID or not. That's a chance you got to take, you know what I mean? But you know what? I never got it. Never, ever got it. I got my vaccine and shot and all that there. But, you know, luckily for me, I've never gotten it. But to see my business being shut down because of COVID, not closed, but there's so much stipulations having to wear masks and stuff. And it got to the point where, dude, I don't even want to work. Because it's a pain in the ass. You have to wear a mask and da-da-da-da, and the customers don't want to wear a mask, and they're supposed to, and it causes controversy. I'm not trying to get off track here. I'm just trying to bring it towards movie making as well, how, you know, you had always plans on making a movie, and it gets shut down, and then 4 or 5 months later, it could be over. It could have been, well, I guess that ain't going to happen now because everybody lost interest because of COVID. But then you mentioned about how Matt, you know, 4 years later, boom. You know, it's there again. So great job by Matt. It's a great job for you to keep that in yourself. Say, hey, you know what? I might not want to do it right now, but if somebody can nudge me and can get me the help, go 60 miles an hour and let's do it. So I'm just proud of you to be able to stick with it, you know, and it's going to happen. It's coming.
I love it. I love it. And absolutely. And I've spoken this to Brian and Matt, more with Brian and get a chance to tell Matt. I mentioned it a bit. It's the truth. I didn't know what to do with the sequel. I just know that everybody wanted it. And we all know it's a team effort. It's a lot of work. And I said to myself, I can shoot another sequel the same way that I did part one, but then I felt like I was going to cheat the audience again. And the why I say again is because I felt like, you know, don't get me wrong. I have no regrets. Diamond Shark part one, the budget we made, it was just amazing how we did the film, but the film to me felt a little short because the funds went down. We did not have no more money. We ended the film and we had to raise monies for post, and we just did it. We did not have enough money, and we finished it the way we did. And, you know, even then when the movie was released, it was still going to be about vampires. It was going to be. So we had like three stories. We had one was going to be New York City. Number two was going to be in the cabin in the woods with vampires. And the third chapter would have been in Tokyo. And sure. I was like, and mainly in Tokyo because Mr. Yoshida is the Japanese CEO of this big pharmaceutical company in Tokyo. And part one, if you remember the sit down, that's Mr. Mm-hmm. Yoshida. So that was always a dream. I was like, that's the chapters. I remember talking to Aaron, the actor, said, this is what we're going to do, chapter two, chapter three. The dream went away. It went, you know, again, COVID, it just destroyed the dream. And I said, you know, everybody, you know, I had this, everybody in the world took a step back, and I'm not the only one. I said, everybody did. And just, you know, it is what it is. If it come back again, if it come back again, because we wanted to do a tour on it, on the Comic Cons and the horror conventions. And I said, hey, you know, it is what it is. That it's just meant to be, not to happen again. And come back to again, what originally this whole, what I'm talking about is Matt and Brian coming to me and saying, listen, we can do it. The spark came to me. I needed that push. Like, I was like, oh man, no way. And I was working on doing another horror film. I was doing going to get ready to do a short film. And in the middle of the process, when Brian and Matt gets to me and say, "Hey, let's do it." I'm like, "What do you mean? How are we going to do it?" So it woke me up. It absolutely did. And now I'm like full zombie train all the way. And I really do believe what you said. I have to say it is going to happen. It's just an amazing how much support, like almost it's every single day. Yeah, the campaign is slow. The Indiegogo is slow. We're not going to the money's, you know, the film is going to be bigger than what, you know, what we're trying to get out there. But every day it's like I would say somebody's like coming up and like it's really interested in coming in as a big time, like, you know, investor and everything. So I really believe it's going to happen. It's just when it's going to happen, but it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I mean, I know about that COVID thing because, you know, I lost a lot of work myself as far as movie work making, acting because of the COVID, because, you know, when you're making independent films where you don't have enough money to begin with, and then when investors pull out because of COVID, and then you lose them all, and then they're never made to this day, and you get in this mindset, well, fuck it, whatever, you know, let me go back to my normal life and work through this miserable, you know, COVID time, and that's my attitude, and that's, I can't help it, you know, and it took me even podcasting, I stopped, because, you know, I was working all the time, and I just didn't want to do anything because it was so depressing as it is. Then finally I got off my lazy ass and started reviewing again and, you know, and started doing interviews again. So it took me a little while to get back in the swing of things because, you know, it's a lot of mental. I mean, it really tore everybody up. I mean, everybody's more worried about trying to keep themselves safe and have a paycheck, a definite paycheck to make sure that you can survive through all this. So I'm back, you're back, and that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, no, that is the amazing thing. I feel like, wow, look, it's amazing, right? 2020, 21, 22, dude, 4 years. It's like, how did that go by so quick? You know, like, yeah. It doesn't even feel like it, right? Because, like, right, yep. 20, 21, 22, and we're about to, 23 is about to end. And it's just like, how does the time go? Like that, it's just like that. And it just, yeah, you're right. I mean, and I'll tell you what, when the film was Zombie Shotgun Part 1 was released, as I was saying, we had all these producers we were talking to. Believe it or not, all of them left the industry, gone. There's only one of them that, believe it or not, is one of the producers. I brought him back as one of them to come into Zombie Shotgun Part 2 because he was the one that was really like pushing for the sequel, and he was the one that was like, "We're gonna do this." And all the rest of the team, they left. They went to another industry, you know, besides film. They did their own. They're doing their own thing, working in other places, and it's pretty sad, you know. It took, you know, and a lot of people that what they loved and they enjoyed, they are no longer doing it. And it was tough.
Well, I think what helped me get out of my slump too is I told you off the air, I worked in a film called Shatter back in 2012, up in Lewistown, on the outskirts of State College. And, you know, it took a long time for it to get released. It wasn't because of finances, it was because, you know, how life is, a producer moves to California or one's building a home or whatever. And I can remember doing voiceover work with the cop. I think that was done in like 2018. You know, that's how long it took to get, you know, get things in motion. And then when that movie got released in February of 2022, and then I bought myself a copy. It's just because I wanted to see what the final product was. And then when I saw myself in that big scene at the end of the movie, you know, with my patient, that really got me going again, you know, to get some positivity, you know, because like I said, it's been so shitty. And then when I seen that, it just got me all riled up again. Like, you know, this is what I want to do again, you know. And you know, it's easy to get voiceover work because they'll ask me to do voiceover work for trailers. I can do it right here from home. That's the easy part. But when I saw that, I'm thinking, dude, I miss it. Yeah, I miss it, you know, because, you know, I did two short films. I think the last acting I did on set was in 2016 up in the, right before COVID hit, up in Williamsport. And we haven't done nothing since. But, dude, I tell you what, I know, the longer it goes, the more that fire is starting to burn again.
So, yeah.
We'll see what happens.
No, I agree. We'll see. Even like, so when, even when COVID was, you know, I think the first, I think year, I was like, dude, I got to do something, you know? And, I forced myself to do a short film during COVID, and, it, 'cause I wanted to do something so bad. And it was tough, but, you know, even to find actors and stuff like that, but it was, I was able to do it. And then, yeah, it's just, it's when it's there, and it just, you know, even now, like, I bet a lot of the people for the SAG, even yourself finding out the SAG strike is over, that definitely probably put more fire on people to, like, start working.
Yeah. We're getting a little bit off track, but I mean, it does kind of tether into Lon Zombie the Shotgun, because, like you said, when you made that, when you're about to release it, about to have some festival circuit, whammo, COVID hits. So that's why I figured we might as just talk about the whole conversation about what COVID did to everything. But
yeah, no, now, it did.
As I'm at the Shotgun Part 2, you know, did you release anything of where it's being shot at or anything? Are you allowed to, or have you?
Yeah, I'm allowed to. Oh yeah. It was, so Matt was convinced me that it would be awesome if, especially if I'm looking for a cabin in the woods, where the hideout of the vampire, well, the hideout of Aaron, the zombie with a shotgun, and he convinced me that West Virginia had one of the best locations for cabin in the woods. And he living in West Virginia, he talked to me about how there's these awesome, you know, incentives there, and it would be a great place to shoot for the film. And, you know, especially that the film gets away from New York City. He sold me on the idea. I was like, hey, you know, I love it. You know, let's shoot in West Virginia. So that's where we're aiming to shoot the film. Most of the film, I'm not sure what other, you know, anything could happen, right? There could be other stuff that could happen. But as of now, we're heading to West Virginia. I know Bill
and then
wants to also have ideas to shoot in Pennsylvania. So that's also a possibility of doing something there as well. So, you know, with those two, I'm cool with it, as long as, you know, we, you know, scheduling makes sense, and it makes sense for all the actors and the crew.
So now, you have been mentioning, posting on your Facebook page on who's attached so far. Do you want to mention to the listeners who's all attached so far?
So as of right now, we have Bill Obrist, Lynn Lowry, Monique Dupree, Vincent Ward, and Cadman Toy. I'm thinking down the line, make sure I know. And of course, Aaron, the original Braden Body, who's playing Aaron, the original zombie. Yep. Shotgun. We also have two other cast members that we're not allowed to mention. They're also attached to the project.
And I already know who they are, and I'm not going to say.
Yes. And there's also other, I know Matt has also mentioned names too, that, you know, that he's working on also coming on. So. Yep. Yeah. So it's pretty amazing how that was all put together. Again, you know, the strength of a lot with Matt and Brian, you know, putting that cool cast together for the film. Bill Obrist is going to play the main vampire, Darius Kane, which is the vampire, the lead of the vampires. And so, you know, it's a great story. It's going to start off how it ended in part one, where Aaron's about to be chased by the police and he goes out to hide out. And that's where we have the cabin in the woods. Nice. Part one, his heart was taken. That's a big element in this sequel, where he's looking for the heart and everybody else wants the heart. And it's a, you know, like I said, it's a good story. And there's no mention of apocalypse, zombie apocalypse. There's no mention of a virus going crazy. This is a story of this is just the world that exists in now.
That already happened. Yeah.
Yes. It it happened in not necessarily like there, like there are zombies among living in present time. Like New York City is New York City. Everyone knows there are zombies, but whatever, you live your life, just stay away from them. And that's the kind of world that I've created at, as you could see in part two. So there's none of that. Oh, we got to run. We got to hide. These guys are going. There's none of that. They're just there. So, right. And we concentrate in that way. We concentrate in the story of this vampire and this zombie. Mainly the vampire wants, his main thing is how come the zombie is not a so-called generic zombie as we all know. Why is this guy has intelligence just like me? And we're both dead. And his interest comes in, and his interest becomes more sinister of what he wants to do with Aaron, because he is threatened by this new characteristics from coming from a zombie. And that storyline, it is like part one, again, a lot of people was like, oh, it was like, part one was a lot of, story and stuff like that. And this one, it's sort of the same thing. We're going to know a story about two, whatever you want to call it, creatures, or zombies and vampires that just want to know how they feel threatened by each other. And they just want to be, top of the world. They want to be the top of the chain. And that's where the whole elements of the whole fight and everything. So there is going to be shoot 'em up scenes and stuff like that. But a lot of it is this cool, nice story. Just how I left it off with the part one. And I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited to tell a story about it. I feel like there hasn't been, I could be wrong, but I don't think there has been something like that where zombies and vampires, get on the screen and they're able to have conversations and talk and battle it out.
Yeah, ironically enough, it's kind of the cast that you mentioned. Monique Dupree, I know very well. I was a celebrity guest at a paranormal fest back in 2013 up in, I think it's Allentown, Bethlehem. And I finally got to meet her there. And she's a sweet lady. I met her and her husband and her kids. But when I seen that she was attached, that was fantastic. I love her. And of course, Lynn and Bill. I actually met Vincent also at the same paranormal fest, believe it or not, in 2013.
That's so awesome.
A lot of the cast members I'm already familiar with in the movie, because he was from that zombie TV show. What was it called again?
The Walking Dead.
Yeah, The Walking Dead. Now, Walking Dead was good probably the first two or three seasons, and I kind of gave up on it because I get a little out of control. I only like something for so long. If it starts, making it go 7, 8, 9, 10 years, whatever, it's just too much. But I remember him in there, and it's kind of funny that I saw that when you're posting the cast. I said, wow, I know a lot of those people, but yep.
So, yeah, I hear a lot of wonderful things. I've spoken to some of the cast members very few times, I've heard a lot of many good things about them, and it makes sense. Matt is that type of guy that he's coming from him and telling me about these guys, that he would make sure that the people that he represents and manages are class act and everything like that. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, if you ever talk to Bill, mention Gruesome to Bill and listen to what he has to say.
Oh, definitely.
Every time I interview him, he's always interviewing me. It's so funny. So what are you doing, Scott? Bill's a great guy because it's just people. For a movie to be successful, there has to be chemistry, obviously, and there has to be, with Matt's clients. I mean, I get to know most of them because of Matt, or just by dumb luck, we'll be at the same place at the same time. When I mentioned about Monique Dupree, and of course that's Tony Todd's sister. I guess a lot of people know that. And I met Tony too. I spent a whole weekend with Tony at the same Parafest. We got drunk together at the bar. So it's kind of funny how it all comes into one, and I'm just very happy for you. I'm glad there is a part two brewing, because one was so good, and a lot of films just like yours that was just cut you're cut at the knees. You know, you're about ready to go to festival circuit. Boom, everything's canceled. You never had a chance to represent your movie at a festival or nothing. And this is just a rocket ship for you to get started again. And
yeah, you know, it's a huge rocket ship from part one to like now. Just like I said, like 0 to 60, like 1 second. We felt cheated with part one, and again, you know, like everybody had, you know, took a step back from the whole thing, and it was just I felt like when this started to come, I felt like, oh wow, I guess, you know, I guess people did know about it, know about the film. I've been advertising it for so many years. So, you know, many of the cast members did know about it. And I was like surprised about it. And Matt was telling me, oh, it seems like everybody I mentioned, they're like, yeah, I've seen that online. And from that being a very, you know, the part one, you know, being such a independent film, sometimes I say such an independent film with such a big heart, you know, I have to really say, because, you know, the cast and crew was just fantastic in that film. I mean, we were shooting in New York City in one of the hottest weeks in New York City history. And it was just so bad. No one would ever know. The first week of August, we would hit temperatures 100 degrees like 4 days in a row. And that's wow. Very unheard of in New York City. I mean, yeah, you get 90s a lot. And one day you get 100 right. Back to 90s and everything. And it just, you know, looking back at the film of like how many days we were like sweating under the lights and everything was over 100 degrees. And you can't even tell when you look at the film. It's just because everybody, you know, did such a great job and stuff like that. And just to feel like where that, you know, I feel like that was like from there to now, it is awesome.
Well, this is what I want you to do. The song that I'm going to tell you about to listen to doesn't exactly mean exactly what we're talking about, but I want you to listen to REO Speedwagon, Keep the Fires Burning.
Okay.
And I'll keep you pumped up to get through this donations and stuff for your next movie. It'll get you pumped up. Keep those fires burning.
Yes. I'm really bad with names. I'm pretty sure I might have heard it. So you just send me.
If I find it, I'll send it to you. But yeah, this is something that, you know, I mean, I know you're pumped up right now, but there's going to be low points as well. You know.
Oh, yeah.
I think keep you pumped up.
Yeah. I mean, even like the whole journey of just from, you know, 2012 doing now, it's just, you know, you get so many low points, you know, you get a lot of, you know, just so many bumps in the road, and you get discouraged, right? And I think that's part of everybody, right? Us being artists, yep. you there's a time you get discouraged, and you know, every artist had that point in their life that I quit, I'm not doing this anymore, right? Mm-hmm. I just hate this, and then you just snap out of it, and like, what the hell am I thinking about? This is what I love, you know. And I think all artists are like that. And I think by doing this for so many years, I think it doesn't even, like, honestly, truth, I don't think anything really bothers me anymore. I mean, I've been shooting films for over 25 years, close to 30 years. And I've heard everything. I heard people criticize me. You're shit. You're terrible. You shouldn't be in the industry. You should never do that. I've heard, you know, from Zombie with a Shotgun. I still get DMs just like trashing the movie and trashing me. And people don't even know me. And I just laugh, you know, sometimes I respond. Yeah, well,
there's two words for them. Fuck them.
Yeah. Sometimes I engage in conversations with them, you know, and then they were like,
you know what?
Like, bad? Some guy said, I saw your film. He trashed it. And I'm like, oh, wow, you're the only one then. Thank you. I said, okay.
What you should say is thank you, because the more you trash it, the more people are going to want to watch it.
Yeah.
And that's how it works.
I feel like, you know, I've so much stuff that I've gotten, you know, when I was younger, I would always like, it would always bother me like, oh my God, you know, it always, but like now it doesn't really matter. You know, like I even sometimes talk to Brian. I was like, dude, you know, as fast as this goes, this whole thing could like collapse. I've seen it so many times, you know, we just stay on board. We stay focused. Hopefully not. But I said, this, you just always expect the worst, and if it, you know, but I'm always prepared for that. I'm always prepared for the worst. And again, I've just like, I'm like, again, I'm pretty sure there's going to be a lot of low points and you're just like, all right, let's just keep on rolling. Just get up and just keep on going.
Well, I'll tell you a quick funny story. There's a movie I did called Real Cases of Shadow People, the Sarah McCormick story in 2019. It was released, right? Mm-hmm. So the filmmaker, I reviewed two of his films. So he had an idea of having five actors record their scenes on their iPhones to tell their story about the shadow people.
Okay.
So I did mine, right? And it looked, I did it on iPhones. It looked really nice, right? So when the movie was released, right? Do you know how you can tell when somebody does not like you? Because it said, yeah, the opening scene of the movie, the actor sucked. Because it was my first partial opening scene. And I looked at it and I went, oh, thanks, Brian. I really appreciate that. He fucking deleted his account because I called him out. Dude, stop being a pussy. I mean, my whole point of that conversation is, if somebody doesn't like you, they're going, no matter what you do, they're going to say you sucked. But after that person made that comment, right? And then it started getting emails. They figured out that it was me, you know, Caruso as my real name, getting messages saying, you did not suck. Fuck that guy. It was so funny because I called him out and the guy deleted his whole comment and disappeared. Dude, you should have kept it there.
You should have kept it there.
You got called out. But yeah, there's a lot of funny stories I can tell you, man. Back when I first got started into podcasting, wow, a lot of cutthroats, man.
Oh, yeah. You
know, that podcast versus this podcast and da-da-da. And, you know, and trust me, I had people talk shit on me after they blocked me on Facebook.
Yeah.
All it did for me was it got me farther up. I mean, when a filmmaker hears somebody trashing me, and what's that filmmaker going to do? They're going to contact me and say, hey, do you want to review my movie? So they actually only helped me. You know what I mean? I didn't have to go out and ask for movies. They're all coming to me because this person's saying that it all works out in the end. The reason for this conversation is when somebody trashes somebody's film, just because that person does not like it doesn't mean it's going to attract other people to watch your film as well, saying that guy's incorrect. So that's the cool part about, I know as a filmmaker, when you make a film and somebody trashes it, it kind of affects you a little bit because you all have blood, sweat, and tears of making that movie. But in the long run, they're only helping you get your movie out.
No,
have you seen Tubi TV?
Yeah.
Were you on there? There's a lot of movies on there.
Yeah, zombies on the Zombie Shotgun. You could watch it there for free there. Yep. And you're so right. I mean, like I said, it does. You know, like when I was like, you know, younger, it used to bother me a lot. And after a while, mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, what the hell's that? You know, like, you know, you could even remember. Do you remember when IMDb, when you was able to put the comments in the bulletin board? People would like, and they took it out.
Yeah.
You would go into like movies like The Godfather, and you would have people tear it apart on the bulletin. Like, this is the worst really? Movie ever. And I remember reading shit like that. I'm like, what? And then you would go to then you go to Godfather Part Two, and then you have people that says, how can people like this terrible movie? This is the worst movie ever made. And I'm like, then you start. That's when you started saying, what? You know, you're always going to have somebody that's not going to, you know, like something. But when you have movies like that, and knowing that those two movies are, you know, you may not like it or not, but you have to respect that those two movies might be one of the great 100 top greatest movies ever made in American cinema. And you just say again.
Sadly, with today's youth, the 80s movies, you know, they don't like them.
No, they don't. But it's
because they don't know them, right?
Yeah.
And when I work with 20-somethings at my job, I'm 55. I mention movies they never even heard of.
I know.
How is that even possible? This is some, the youth of today are so stuck on two things: gaming, and that's their whole life, or movies they hear, like the big budget films.
Yeah,
I just cannot believe. I had a conversation with a kid at work. He's 25. He had no idea who Michael Myers was.
Oh my God!
You got to be kidding me. Well, anyways, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's true. You know, Netflix is a Netflix generation. You know, and the social media generation and everything like that, and you know, it's instant gratification generation. You know, seeing those movies. You know, it's sad, but you know, I guess you know the time. You know, that's the time.
My whole point was the comment about the Godfather probably was somebody who's young and don't understand different years of movie making.
Yeah.
You know,
and you know, that was the reason why they took the bulletin boards out, because they said that it started to get very nasty with like a lot of the films that people could criticize. IMDb got rid of it. And then you could write reviews, but you can't no more how people used to trash it. It's like trash movies. Like, and they used to also trash a lot of the directors. And I remember that was just for fun. I said, let me go on the bulletin board of this guy. And you remember, right? I used to read all this stuff. Like, oh my God. I remember people used to say, yeah, I went to high school with that guy. He used to tell like stories and backstories of what the person used to be when they were young. I'm like, this is crazy, but it was good stuff, but I get it. And then IMDb was like, you know, Hollywood was like, yo, telling IMDb, get rid of it, dude. You're destroying our clients. It's destroying our movies. It's destroying everything. Get rid of it. They got rid of it.
Unfortunately, I've noticed for a true fact that even cast members of a movie that are in a movie that they didn't get their own way would stand there and pose as a fake name and trash the movie that they were in.
Yeah.
I could call out four actors right now that they think they're so clever and they're not, because I can search anything. But 10 years ago, this happened, and I could easily have destroyed them. But I didn't, of course. But that's one of the reasons why IMDb is starting to snack it up a little bit, because that's what was happening. You know, you have Johnny Miller, who was in this movie in this state, and the other movie that was made in the same state, that person would attack the other film saying how bad it was just to bring the score down on the movie. Really? Yeah. IMDb ratings does not matter. That's somebody who's making it that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you had it doesn't matter. What matters, you know, anybody can change that score. What matters is the movie being sold, being watched, true people who are watching the film and giving their true. You know, when somebody says, that's the worst movie I've ever seen, number one, you're a fucking liar because you didn't see every film that was made. So that's a blank statement. You know what I mean? Nobody's ever seen every film that was made, so it can't be the worst one ever. That's so dumb. If somebody wants to trash your film, Hilton, if they would give you a reason for why they don't like the film, that's one thing. But if they're going to stand there and say, this is the worst movie ever made, and don't explain why, it's meaningless. It means nothing.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't. It's so funny. Yeah. But you got to love it sometimes. Like I said, you get.
Oh, yeah. I eat that shit up, dude. I eat that shit up. When I hear comments about me, it just pumps my chest.
Yeah.
And then you get 15 more fans.
yeah. And then you get people. Like, I had somebody. It was some female. Was it last week? She like wrote like a whole thing about what she thought about the science, because there's this whole like Zombie the Shotgun has, you know, there's like this little science fiction element into it, like very, very subtle, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I had somebody DM me about what they thought was so amazing about that, and wrote this whole thing about, oh my God, is this part, and wrote this whole thing. And I'm like, wow, this person really was in that whole little concept that I put in part one that not a lot of people caught on it. And here we have this one fan that caught on that whole thing. And I was, that made me happy. I'm like, holy shit.
Yep.
I'm like, and here we go again. I was like, wow, I guess one person figured it out. You know, I always have that joke, but, and I'm like, wow. And it made me so happy. Like, you know, and I had this conversation about it on, you know, messaging back and forth. I was like, yeah, I'm so happy you got it. And we was just talking and everything. And I was just like, that was awesome. You know, and you get like mail like that and you have to be like, well, you know, you gotta love it.
Yeah. There's a couple films that I reviewed lately that was sent to me from filmmakers, you know, and I would watch them. And one of the films that I really enjoy the most is like some of these 80s throwback films. You know how the 80s was where the
knife
would go up, but you don't see it hitting the person, killing the person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the 80s was with low budget films. You don't have it. It does not matter to me, you know. And I can remember doing my review and then I get a message back from the filmmaker. You got it. You understand exactly what I was trying to do. Thank you. And that's, you know, it's my job is not. If I don't like Zombie with a Shotgun, I'm not going to review it because my theory is I don't want to trash something that somebody else might like. I'm not wasting my time to waste my energy saying, oh, Zombie with a Shotgun sucked because the guy's zombie face looked fake as hell. That's, you know, why would I waste my time? I'm not. A lot of filmmaker reviewers like to be the Howard Stern of the horror business, where they'll go out there and trash every film.
Yeah, I've been in podcasts. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Your bridges get burnt. Your bridges get burnt after a while. Who's going to send you a film if you're going to trash? You know. So my theory is, it's your baby. If I don't like it, I might send you a private message and say, "Hey, I enjoyed this part of it, but I'm not going to review it because I'm not a fan of it." That's what I do. That's it. Private individual conversation. I'm not going to review it and trash it because I could hurt somebody who's going. There's people out there that actually would take my word, and that's not my fault. And I'm afraid that if I would trash a film, they're not going to watch it because I don't like it. So I stay away from that. You know what I mean?
No, it's so true. I mean, I would go on podcasts where people try to trash movies, and I refuse to go that road. I'm like, well, you know, I'm like, I see that I didn't see it, or I'm like, listen, you know, everybody has a different opinion. Cause I know what it takes to make a film. So I refuse to go that route when somebody's like trying to get me into like some bait of just trying to trash a horror film. I'm like, I won't do it. And I'm like, well, you know, there's a lot of people that like it. You know, you can't go that way. And you're right. You could burn you don't want to burn your bridges. You don't want to bump into that person and say, hey, I heard, you know, you just don't want to go there. And, you know, so
it's not worth it.
No,
you know, I even listen to reviews to where the person has. I don't understand is I'm in the business, too. So I understand behind the scenes of this prop and that prop and this prop and shooting the last scene first and this first in the middle. It takes a lot of work to do all that. But what gets me so irritated the most, it frustrates me, but I laugh. Is when I hear somebody review a movie, well, yeah, the lighting was a little bit dark in that scene, da da da. Dude, I mean, I've seen people literally pick a movie apart, I mean, making a science project out of it, of what was wrong with it.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, have you ever, you know, my answer would be, have you ever made a movie? No, you probably didn't. If you did, you wouldn't be fucking saying that, because I cannot say that, because I know exactly what it's like to be behind the scenes. It's not fucking easy. I mean, has a shooting day ever gone smooth for you? Once in a while, right?
No.
Something always happens. You know what I mean?
This
could be available on Wednesday.
You know this. You know this very well. They always say behind the scenes of the movie is actually the best story. In the film,
it's
the best part of film, right? And listen, man, even doing part one in Zombie with a Shotgun, you know, like, yeah, we had it was a terrific cast and crew and everything, but it was hell. I never want to get, you know, there's people, cast members and crew members know stories and they always mention it to me. And I'm like, dude, I would never, ever like bring it up, you know, ever on shows or anything. What happened in the set stays in the set. And oh my God. If there was a 24-hour recording of the behind the scenes, that film would definitely would be better than it was like that. That's just how it is. You know, when people have there's so many characters, there's so many, you know, personalities, and so much shit happens, and it was just it's hard. So get back to what you're saying. It's tough. It's rough. And it's like, you know, you know, every day is different. You know, the famous saying, right? Nothing goes according to plan. And that is 100. And with filmmaking, everything is planned and it never goes according to plan, basically. Yep. Right. So that's the interesting thing about the industry is about just never goes according to plan.
If you're not part of that kind of business and you just watch movies from, like, you know, high budget movies, and you come across a low budget film, you are not going to understand it fully unless you are around it or you understand the difference. Like in my neighborhood where I lived over the years, if I say that I was in a movie, the first thing they say is, well, then why are you working here? It doesn't work that way.
Oh my God.
Two, I said, no, they're not backyard films. You know how you know, people don't understand the whole industry of it. And, you know, it's like, I have to, or I'll tell them, they go, yeah, right. Then I have to prove it to them. Which, see, when I meet people now, I don't tell them anything about me anymore. I just don't say anything. Listen. If they search me and find me, fine. But I'm just not, it's just, people don't understand how it's not easy to be in a film, but it's not hard either. I mean, you have to just audition, or you know somebody, or somebody knows your body of work. You can be in something, but it's not like, you know, you're rich. I'm far from rich.
Yeah. You know? Listen, you and I the same. I get it. Like, people. Oh my God, I get it all the time. People, you know, they'll Google me and they're like, oh my God, you know, you've done these documentaries, you've done these narrative fiction, you got this horror franchise going, you have, you know, you've published books and everything. And like, oh my God, I need some money. I get people like that. I need to borrow money. I'm like, dude, I need to borrow money. I get people that will call me like family members and friends. And I've lost a lot of friends like that. They would tell me, dude, I need to borrow money. And I tell them, I don't have money. I said, what? No, look at all this stuff that you're doing. And I'm like, dude, it doesn't work like that.
It
doesn't work. I was like, what does that mean? I'm like, I'm telling you, you don't know how many family and friends I lost just for that. And they'd be like, oh, you're lying. How do you have these movies? These movies aren't. I saw your movies at Amazon. I saw them on Roku. I saw them in Tubi. I saw them in Microsoft. I'm like, okay. I said, do you know anything about the business? I said, it doesn't work like that. I was like, and yeah. So, like, even like people, like even strangers, like I will meet in the street or have a conversation. I don't bring up that I'm a filmmaker.
Nope.
I do not bring it up because they'd be like, oh. Why are you here? What are you doing? Like, what is this? Like, I don't bring it up at all. It's like, okay.
Nope, I don't either.
I only bring it up if somebody is understanding. You know, they understand it.
Yes. Just,
they'll talk about, oh, I'm doing this, doing that. Like, oh, okay. I could now introduce who I am. And then maybe we could have, you never know, network synergies create together and everything. But no, I don't tell.
I work for T-Mobile, as I told you, and I know one time where customers would come in and they became good friends with me, you know, because it's coming in all the time and they would only ask for me to do work for their phones. And I mentioned them about the movie Shatter that I told you right about. You know, they went home and rented that and watched it, and they came in like the following week, and I don't know, they must have printed up the artwork that is printed up on a printer, and they brought it in for me to sign. It was so cute.
Oh, dude,
they really enjoyed the movie. So I signed it for them. But, you know, there are people out there that, you know, I only mention to people who understand, what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it's when I bring it up. But yeah, there's quite a few customers of mine that would actually come in and say, hey, can you sign this for me? We saw the movie and you were great in it. Okay, here you go. It makes me feel weird when they say stuff like that.
But yeah, and then you get probably your coworkers like, what's going on there?
Exactly. What are they talking about?
How come you never told me? Right? And then that comes in, why you never told me?
Because you don't pay attention to me. That's why.
And then that coworker is not going to like you after.
Yeah. They're trying to get me fired up.
Yeah, they don't like you. Yeah.
I know for a fact, and when I first started doing this kind of stuff, I never really got the family support.
Me neither.
You know, when it's a bummer. It really is, because it's something like I have grandchildren. So that movie, they now have me for the rest of their lives. That's always going to be there. They're going to see their grandfather for the rest of their lives when I'm gone.
Yeah.
And that's how I look at it.
You know what's so interesting about that? It seems like that's a common thing about artists. Like they've never got received family support. A lot. Not all. But I feel like especially the ones that never had the nepotism, or like they never had somebody in the family that was part of it. You know, somebody that's fresh and new, just out of the family, decides to be this artist or whatever. And I find that with a lot of my friends, that their families never supported it, or they always thought it was a joke, or they always wanted to see you fail. And that's sad. And I've noticed that a lot.
I sent the clip of me in the movie Shatter to my first wife. She actually went with me on a short film that we shot in Williamsport. I had her play like a zombie. I play like half human, half zombie. It was called Papa Primo's Apocalypse Pizza. So I would order a pizza, you know, half zombie and half human. So I improv'd it all. And it turned out really nice. So I sent her the clip of me in Shattered. Do you know what her response was? Looks good. And the next statement was, it looks professional. I'm thinking, what are you trying to say?
Oh, my God. That's another thing, too. Yeah.
I mean, are you saying that what I'd done before is not professional?
Yeah, it's exactly what you say.
I mean, she was trying to be nice, but it's like, again, you were there. You saw it being shot. You should understand already behind the scenes of how it's like. But anyways, it's here nor there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I'm bringing it up because there's a conversation to talk about, and we're just talking about, you know, whatever, but anyways, how much have you raised so far for Zombie of a Shotgun Part 2?
We didn't raise too much, dude. I think we're like around eight something, close to $900. I mean, it's a really puzzling campaign. I mean, compared to like all the producers that went out and promoted it and everything like that. And that's why we're, you know, doing shows like this, you know, get the audience to know, like, hey, look, we have a kick-ass zombie film that you know, it's not part of the masses. It's not part of the system. This is something that's done independently with people that are surrounded by producers that know what they're doing and want to put something special together. I know it's really hard for, you know, people to put money onto it, you know, not knowing exactly, you know, and I've gotten so much people and I appreciate it. A lot of the fans I've messages, like hundreds and hundreds of messages saying, oh, congratulations. Good luck. I'm going to see what I can do. I can do this and do that. And I really appreciate that, you know, and I get it. Some people you can't just force people to do anything. But again, you know, I'm not the only one that's out there, you know, and you have a lot of the other producers going out there and everything and trying their hardest to do anything. And we understand. We're here. We're going to plug it away. You know, we still have about, you know, 7 weeks. We're going to plug it away. We're going to keep on going. We feel very thrilled. We feel this project is going to be special. And we feel like this project is going to happen at the end of the day. And the support of the fans is what's going to make this film go. And again, like we really, very, very optimistic about the film I'm putting together. And, you know, we're putting in all different types of, in the hands of a lot of people, especially with the strike being over. Now it's, now there's going to be And that's the awesome thing. When we all heard that the strike was over, we were like, now there are a lot of people now that's going to be, you know, taking in the pitch decks and seeing what we have on paper and who's attached and how we're going to get this done. Right. Seeing what the investment is and seeing there's a back record of this film. This film is just not a film that's just coming out of the, you know, woodworks. It's a project that's been in existence since 2012 and it has this, you know, its storyline already. And, but yeah, we need as much help from everybody to come on and chip in the Indiegogo campaign. You can go to Indiegogo and press and search Zombie Shotgun 2, or you can press Indiegogo.com/ZWAS2 Reloaded. And that's the acronym for Zombie Shotgun 2 Reloaded. You could also find the stuff on every single platform from Instagram to Twitter to Facebook to YouTube to every single social media. You could just hit Zombie with a Shotgun. We're there. We're mostly on the three course, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We have a Facebook page, Zombie with Shotgun 2. You can come in and join it. We have producers there you can chat with, and you can chat with me. Same thing with Instagram and Twitter. So that's where you can find it.
Well, I can tell you one thing that I just I do reviews, as you know, and I my main platform is YouTube. It was the Spotify and all them. I can do Spotify too, but I backed off a little bit because I seem to get more notice on YouTube. And believe it or not, I've been using TikTok.
Yeah,
reviews are short enough that I put them in TikTok, and TikTok for Gruesome Project Podcast has blown the fuck up. People,
yes, I love, yeah. I'm also on TikTok, but the thing is, like, I have my own TikTok, Hilton Arreo Ruiz, but it's just so funny because I promote my dogs, right? I have these three dogs.
I have one separate for my dogs too.
And I have this dog that's actually getting pretty popular. He's a Siberian Husky, and I call him Jet the Vampire Dog because he looks like a vampire. And he has these mask. His color of his fur, it's black, but it looks like a mask. And it's an amazing pattern of his eyes that looks very like sinister. So ever since I put him on social media on TikTok, he's getting more and more popular. So now I use them for, and everybody says, "Oh, put the films up." I'm like, dude, but they love the dog stuff. You know, it's something to get away from, like, sometimes the film stuff. I was like, you know, I just want to get a step away a little bit of it and just play with these doggies that I love and take care of them. So I got two Siberian Huskies and one Shepherd. But I'm going to start a zombie TikTok soon. But again, if anybody wants to come to my TikTok, Hilton Ade Ruiz, you'll see all my dogs there. And we're trying to get him on the film, on the vampire dog film, because he looks like a vampire. He really looks like one. but yeah, you know, it's funny you said that, because the study says that YouTube and TikTok is the best place to promote your work. Those two outlets, and it's just funny to say, I have my YouTube channel, but I now don't use it as my primarily, and I wish I did. But you know, you can't do everything, but those are the two best things to go out there and get people to support and rally against you, with your work and everything. And I mean, TikTok is just amazing, man. It is, like, it's amazing. I gotta go, you know, I got to do the rounds, picking up people.
Yeah, me too. All right, Hilton, I just want to give you a big thanks for coming on tonight. We talked about a lot more than anything.
I appreciate you having me on board.
Educational interview. So let's hope and pray that Zombie the Shotgun Reloaded gets a good amount of money raised and get this bitch made.
Absolutely. Well, and you know what's cool? It would be cool, since if everything goes well shooting those locations, that would be cool if you would come on the set and do, like, live podcasts with the freaking actors, the crew, the cast. That would be awesome. I mean, I would love to. I would invite you to do that. That would be fucking awesome. Like, podcast. I mean, everybody would love that shit. You know, and you could have it like every single day having, you know, and you know everybody already. So that is the amazing thing. I got to tell Matt that. I'm going to say, Matt, man, we got to get Scott to do live podcasting the day when we're shooting the film, because that is awesome promotion for everybody, you know, for you, for me. Yeah. And I guess, you know, I guess networking too, everybody knows you and everything, but I think that would be awesome, man, just to be there and just like start like, interviewing people and,
Well, I want to give you a big thanks, Hilton, for coming on tonight. I really appreciate the conversation. We talked about Zombie with the Shotgun Part 2, and that we have a Indiegogo raising money for the movie. And we also talked about COVID and everything else in between. I think it was a fantastic conversation. I think people are going to love the conversation. And the main goal was to raise money for your film. I want to thank you for coming on tonight.
Thank you.